circuits are only usually designed one way. There's no real redundancy in an analog signal, so you can't really get error correction that way. So it's much more limited, unfortunately. I mean, eventually, if everyone kind of goes to digital streams, that won't be the case, and there'll be the ability to kind of adjust the symbol rate for the sound quality and what have you. So that's another feature to look forward to in the future.
Well, you know, Roy, just makes me think about FTA, 30 watts, maybe a magnetic loop or a small antenna in the attic or small vertical mobile antenna. And you can walk all around the world. You can contact almost anywhere. And I guess the idea, the similarity to this kind of SDR with a DNR that's very capable, you know, where, you know, it could bring about a change where more people will be operating low power with a minimal setup and be able to talk all over the world. Go ahead.
Well, possibly, but as I mentioned, FT8 is a digital mode, and almost no one uses a digital mode on HF that isn't kind of FT8 related. Most people operate single sideband. You could say CW's digital, but it's kind of, you know, it certainly isn't going to have built-in error correction. The point with FT8 that isn't going to be addressed in any kind of near future is that you're not only manipulating the received signal, you're manipulating the transmitted signal as well, which is not the case with HF. The HF doesn't really, other than you doing sound equalization so that you like the sound of your voice, is very little modification of a transmitter signal. So you don't quite have that similarity that FT8 has a symmetry where there's a lot of processing before your signal is transmitted out. So there's a lot more that can be done when it's received by the other side. FT8 has so much redundancy and error correction that you can actually be transmitting below the noise floor in your area for the receiver and still be able to reconstruct all the information that's being sent to you. That's not possible with voice or any kind of analog HF, simply, again, because you can't inject redundancy, you can't inject authentication tokens, error correction codes to demonstrate that you've collected the packets and they haven't been screwed up. So without that additional feature, it's going to be very limited what any kind of a digital noise circuits can possibly handle. They're just going to deal with audio noise that they're programmed to work with. They can't really, autocorrect.
USO, Roy, but, you know, I do have to say, if the noise floor is S8 and the DNR is able to eliminate enough noise so that you can hear a station calling, S3, you know, that means that you can hear more. Maybe they can hear me, maybe they can't hear me. But, you know, if people could hear better, you know, on upper and lower sidebands, then maybe, you know, there could be more communication there. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, again, you know, if you were dealing in the digital domain, you would probably have a lot more options. The problem is that most noise is too random to get rid of. If it's, you know, if you have some kind of, I don't know, a 1500 hertz hum, it's not that difficult to notch out that particular frequency, and you listen around the other sides of it and such. But that isn't how most noise presents. And, Andy was at one point during Andy's Corner Ideas, what he was going to talk about, he came up with an excellent idea of talking about the different types of noise that exists in electrical equipment. So most noise is unfortunately far too random for digital signal processors to remove most of it. They might be able to take a little bit off the top, but nothing close to what you could do when you digitize it and make it redundant and put in error correction codes to check on accuracy and such. So, again, you might be able to get a little bit off the top of the background noise, but you're certainly not going to bring it down from an S5 to an S3. You might be able to get it down from an S5 to an S4.8 or something. So that's not going to be enough to really do much. I have never been terribly impressed by digital signal processors' ability to get rid of background noise. You might feel differently, but I've used a few, and I always find myself, tweaking the settings and going up and going down and not being terribly satisfied. You know, I would love to have some kind of magic button. You press it, and all of a sudden, you know, a good rating of worth of noise just drops down into the background. But I've never experienced anything like that. The best luck I've tended to have is when there's one particular frequency that's just kind of jamming everything that I'm able to notch out.
Do that sounds really good? I think that certain transceivers can eliminate a 4 or 5 S units of noise, or at least make an S3 or an S2 signal somehow readable. I know the more expensive radios, you know, like ICOM 7610 and the Yaesu FTDX101, etc., you know, they have more of a capability to block out the noise.
Well, I don't know. They have a bigger advertising budget, maybe. Again, not familiar. I've seen loads of people playing with their radios on YouTube. I've never seen dramatic drops in background noise when they engage the noise reduction circuits. There are companies that are dedicated to simply manufacturing. A lot of times they encase them in a speaker. So you buy BHM or something. I forget the name. It's a British make. It's an external speaker with a built-in DSP chip. So, you know, they have rather nice algorithms, but even theirs is, you know, not incredibly effective. So, unfortunately, I don't think if you pay more, you get a particularly much better noise reduction circuit. It's more of an art form than it is a science at this point. Again, most likely, eventually, when artificial intelligence and such is incorporated in everything, including toothpaste, no doubt they will simply have predictive circuits that listen to a noisy transmission and are able to figure out what the guy's trying to say and reconstitute it in their voice. Again, that's probably coming some point in the future, not the present, because that type of artificial intelligence is beyond even a rack of NVIDIA boards. But be interesting to see what happens.
Well, just think about it this way. Let's say you're having a QSO. You start out as S9. They give you S9, you give them S9. And it's really S9. You know, it's an S9 on the meter. And you talk for like 25 minutes, 30 minutes or so, 35 minutes, and the signals start to drop, the QSB comes up. What do you do? You know, you start looking for your noise reduction, and not press a DNR button, and 9 to 10, I can still hear them talking. And, you know, for me, that's like a really great thing.
Okay, well, your equipment has apparently well-designed noise reduction circuits. Sometimes, actually, I think I've told this story probably too many times, but when I had more antennas on my roof, I had diversity reception, and I would listen to one antenna that was horizontally oriented in one ear and another vertically oriented in the other ear. And occasionally a guy from Florida would show up, and when I talked to him, his signal would slowly move from my right ear to my left ear, then back to my right ear, then back to my left ear. So in his case, it wasn't actually fading. It was Faraday rotation. His polarization angle of his signal was rotating through the ionosphere and becoming less likely to be received by the wrong-oriented antenna I had. So in that case, kind of merging both of those antenna signals together was better than any noise suppressant type of reduction circuits. But, you know, it takes two antennas. And not all times is fade an aspect of Faraday rotation. Sometimes it's just fade.
QSL. I don't know really very much about that, but I guess it's interesting to check it out anyway. What I wanted to say is, you know, hearing a lot of stations calling, you know, from Far East, you know, for the first time I'm hearing the Far East, like, almost every other day. Sometimes I can contact them. I don't usually call them twice within, like, a half a year's time. So, yeah, but far, long path, signal, my antenna is favorable to the east. So that would be a long path to the Far East.
Yeah, that would mean you were going the long way around.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny. I always operated 100-watt radio, sent 100-watt signal into the same wire antenna that I've had. And, you know, I think the difference is I can hear better. So, you know, if I can hear better, maybe that would make a huge difference. You know, I think most people in the DX stations, they don't have a really high noise floor. They can hear a lot more than me, you know, here in the urban center, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, being in big cities, there's a big price to pay as far as a ham. You know, occasionally I'll talk to a guy who goes up to upstate and sets things up, and he's amazed by the background silence. The noise floor is much lower. So, yeah, noise floors have an effect. Electrical equipment that's all around us here in New York, big equipment, small equipment. I'm next door to the Coney Island a train station. God knows what kind of electronic equipment they have running all through the day and the night. And just, you know, everyone and their brother has these inexpensive wall warts, all capable of spewing RF because they're switching power supplies. So there's all kinds of noise, unfortunately, that you don't have out there. But, you know, sometimes if you're lucky, the ionosphere is willing to grant you interesting propagation, and you take the long way around the Earth, and you bump into the strangest people. I regularly find myself chatting to a guy, I think his name is Mike, in Namibia. He seems to be a regular on 10 meters. So, you know, I'm sure there are other similar cases out there. You know, sometimes you get away with it, and sometimes you don't. You know, during the summer, 10 meters was dead as a doornail. Probably some kind of solar burst that was disrupting F1, F2 ionosphere layers. But, you know, sometimes things work out.
QSL. 10 meters. 10 meters. I can access 10 meters with a tuner inside the radio. But I guess my question is, why doesn't my LDG tuner tune all of the band when the radio internal tuner can tune the whole band? Go ahead.
Well, simply because all antenna tuners are not designed the same way. They have different ranges of abilities to transform impedances. There are different types of impedance transforming circuits. There are T circuits, there are L circuits, there are I circuits, and a bunch of others. And they all have slightly different characteristics. And even two L circuits, antenna tuners, because they don't have identical capacitance and inductance maximums and minimums, will have different ranges of the ability to transform impedances. Dick, may rest in peace, used to regularly say that he would love for antenna tuning companies to publish Smith charts that showed the ranges of impedance that their designs would handle. And occasionally, I've kind of tricked my antenna tuners. I've had antenna tuners that would not tune to the impedance that I wanted. Now, you have to keep in mind that impedance is not an absolute number. It's not a scalar. It's a vector. So it's a value plus an angle. You can rotate the angle by changing the distance in your transmission lines. And so when I introduced an additional, I think it was a 3-foot jumper to my 10-meter antenna system, I was then able to rotate the impedance back into an area where my antenna tuner was capable of matching it to 50 ohms. So there's a lot of tricks that you can play on an antenna tuner.
Well, you know, I used the same antenna, and I tested the same antenna tuner on two different radios, and each radio had a different result.
Okay, that's interesting. Then they might have a slightly different impedance matching amount. You know, they might be not identical. Because, you know, we also, even back in the good old days with Dick, he would regularly remind everyone that it isn't that the output transmitter stage of a transmitter, it has an internal 50-ohm impedance. It can have any kind of impedance. It's that it's designed to deal with a load of 50 ohms. So what its internal impedance is and, you know, how that differs radio from radio might be a factor in that.
KG2RY. QSL. Well, what I did was I have one radio set up for 40, 20, 15, and 10, and the other radio set up for 17 and 12.
Okay. Say again and scream it into the microphone if you can't turn the preamp up, because you're very, 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 very quiet.
AE2CKS, told Danny Martin.
Yes, what would you like to say?
No, I'm not adding to this conversation. I'll wait for you to finish. I have a couple of questions.
Oh, okay. So when we're done with this, I'll call again and you'll come on. So, David, what you're doing is working for you. It's difficult, really, working in the metropolitan area because of all the background RFI. But you deal with it as best you can.
Well, you know, Roy, I have to tell you, ham radio is a very fulfilling and rewarding hobby. I recommend it to anyone. Go ahead, sir.
I do as well. I try my best to recruit new members. I do it through mostly Kings County Radio Club because there in Brooklyn with me, and Limewark has enough people promoting the hobby. So we all try our best. I try and answer questions if and when people ask me and promote the hobby. It's kind of difficult selling it to youngsters. You know, they keep on showing you their cell phone like they just discovered something. And I have much better success with people in their 30s plus. So it's a great hobby. I've put a lot of time and effort in promoting it. I'm sure you have as well. And that's part of why we're all here tonight.
Well, kids that have their cell phones, they're addicted to the text. Text, WhatsApp, Telegram, through the Facebook, etc. And lots of advertisements there, tons of advertisements. And I'm wondering if it's possible, you know, for people to communicate, like on ham radio, like with a protocol on a talk and text phone that has no internet data. Go ahead.
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Things like that have shown up as applications on cell phones with some kind of internet stream to radio type of interface. So I don't think it's quite there. And I'm not even aware if they're really working on it. There's some group of people working on yet another voice digital protocol. I think it's MS-17. I think it's a terrible name for a protocol, personally, but well, it's their name. That offers the same digitized voice. A text, you know, we talked earlier, JS Call is a text-based digital mode that's almost identical to FT8. They basically took the FT8 engine out and replaced the call sign and signal strength text with a more open text field that you could chit-chat, albeit very slowly, with. So although I see little signs of that, I don't see a lot of development. Most likely because most of the people developing for amateur radio are of a certain age where they like to talk. It's a strange thing about generations. Our generation tends to like to talk. They use phones to talk. Younger people, as hopefully everyone knows, is decidedly interested in texting. I know people, young people, who have phones who never talk on their phone. They're texting, they're snapping pictures of what they ate, and they're doing videos, but they're not particularly talking. So I think there's a divergence between those two generations. So that I don't really, I'm not terribly optimistic that there will be radio text base in the general amateur radio community anytime soon.
Yeah, but people that hardly ever talk on the phone, they hardly talk. And maybe if we can somehow convince younger people to talk more, and get more out of it, you know, politely and in a civilized way, you know, you can get so much out of that, whether it's on a phone or whether it's on a radio or whether it's in person, whatever.
Well, I wish it was that simple. You know, I recall the old line, you know, dragging a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Younger people have a different way of looking on technology than you or I do. Again, and you can trace this even farther back. If you go back to before the development of ubiquitous telephones, most communications were done by letter, and a lot of people wrote very elegantly. You know, if you've ever seen Ken Burns do his thing on a documentary and he reads the personal notes that people send each other, you know, it's like a a regular paid author wrote these things. Written language kind of died off to a degree when the phone became a big thing and most conversations, exchanges took place verbally on a telephone. And we kind of come from that era, the tail end of it. Then there was the computer and text messaging, and youngsters regularly prefer sending not even email, but very short spurts of text messages back and forth. No doubt, if you haven't experienced it, you've heard people complain that they come to a holiday dinner table and the youngsters are just sitting there typing away. They're not talking, and sometimes they're cross-texting each other. So, you know, one person on one side of the table is texting the other person on the other side of the table. So it's just in their nature. I mean, eventually technology will shift into something that we don't have a clue about, and the population, that generation, will tend to go to that type of mode. And the people who call themselves Zoomers today will complain that the younger generation don't type anything, that they do something else. They who knows, they blink their eyes.
Well, you know, I just had a thought in my mind. This thought is, how to say, if a person does what the advertisers tell them to, or they do what they're supposed to do according to popular culture and, you know, what is happening at any given moment, you know, that the products that they'll get, you know, somewhat inferior and a lot more expensive. You got to know what you want.
Yeah, I understand that idea. But the point is, as much as people can be manipulated by advertisements, there's only so much that they could be manipulated. I don't know if you remember, I think it was the 1990s, there was a drink called Zuma that I'm sure probably tasted atrocious, but the company was a big company. I don't remember it was PepsiCo. It was a big company. They invested millions in advertisement. That product died a very, very cold death. And you have things like Microsoft. Yes, Jim?
I think it was Zima, and it was truly awful.
Yeah, I probably have it mixed up with Zune, which I think was an application, a ripoff of Apple's iTunes or something that Microsoft lost money. Microsoft has lost millions and millions of dollars on things that they heavily advertise. Facebook has lost billions of dollars on their magic Verita, forget what they call those damn goggle things. Just because you can throw a lot of money at it does not necessarily mean that you can manipulate people. If they're capable of being manipulated, money makes it work much better. But you can't force people to act out in a different way. And I think youngsters are just kind of locked into this mode of communication. They don't want to talk on telephones. I don't think they want to talk on radios. They just want to punch in some very, very abbreviated symbols and word segments to exchange ideas and opinions.
Some observations on that, Sheriff.
Certainly, Jim.
In my family, I got some nieces and nephews and sons, and at the family holidays, what you would describe definitely occurs, and sometimes I look around the rest of the room and I realize there's a subgroup or majority of the group doing that whole thing with their thumbs on the phone. I realize that everything else going on around the room is just not happening or incredibly boring. So, like I'm wont to do, I strum up a conversation having to do with one of those forbidden topics, you know, the ones I'm talking about. And
it's interesting how the youngins come around, and when you give them a chance to interject their thoughts and listen to some interesting exchanges of information, they do engage. They do, at least the ones that I know. I think sometimes we don't give them enough credit that maybe what they're looking at is more interesting than we are, and maybe we need to raise the bar. That's my thought. Figured I'd share it.
Okay. I mean, you can distract them away from their cell phones for a time. And I've kind of looked, and they've shown me things that they were looking at. And a lot of times, maybe it's just a generational thing. You know, I mean, again, there seems to be an incredible interest in what other people are eating. I'm sure there are terabytes of data flowing through the cell phone network of just snapshots of plates of whatever sitting on a dinner table. I personally don't quite understand it. I prefer eating my food as opposed to photographing it for some kind of posterity. But, you know, again, I think it's a generational thing.
I agree with your food size up with that. But how can I put this? Perhaps their food picture sharing is equivalent to ham radio's 5-9. I'm reaching, I know, but I think we all could talk more across different spectrums. I mean, we play around in all of the world here, and it's cool. And they got theirs, but we all got something to advance, I think, to better it. I try.
Well, that's good. You should never give up. You know, I mean, it's just a different mode of communication. It's neither inherently better nor worse. In the scheme of things, it's just what they do, and you kind of have to accept it. I mean, I chat with my niece and nephews at the dinner table, and they're polite, and they answer. And every so often, they show me their screens, and they go back to their screens. And that's just the nature of our time. Again, who knows? In 50 years, the youngsters at the dinner table might be telepathically sending messages back and forth at each other. Or something else that we can't possibly imagine today.
WTBC?
Yes, Rich.
I had to step away, so I don't know where you are in the order of things, but do you have time for some oddball questions?
Well, we have Tony waiting to ask his question. I'll put you in right after Tony. How's that?
That's fine.
Okay, very good. Well, once again, I wish I had a simple solution. It's just the nature of human beings. Technology has profound effects on generations in different ways. If you're brought up one way and the technology shifts, most times, hopefully, you deal with it as best you can. I used to joke that there were people of a certain age who you were guaranteed if you went into their house, their VCR was flashing 12 because they just couldn't figure out how to set the clock, or they gave up on it for some reason or other. And, of course, the VCR is a thing of the past for most people, so you don't have that indicator at all. You know, there are other indicators. People of a certain age decided to kind of take the off-ramp when computers became ubiquitous. They kind of handed it off to their sons or daughters or grandsons, and they might use them, but they don't know how they work, and they don't care. And, you know, younger people don't really have that division. Whatever is the big technology, they tend to jump on it and take it as their own. So that's again, the nature of things. In the old days when technology was very slow at changing, being elderly gave you wisdom. You had experiences that were appropriate for society. nowadays, if you don't want to understand computers and you don't want to understand a lot of technology, that kind of limits your ability to offer some forms of wisdom to younger generations. So that's just the way we're built.
Marketers and trackers are inside your devices, internet, data, products and services, marketing and advertising, competition and boredom, and I don't know, is it good or is it not good?
I have an answer.
Well, okay, Jim, give us your answer. I'll just give you my short, which is it's good and bad. But, Jim, what's yours?
Your answer is as valid. I won't discount it, but I'll throw this on top of it. If it's free, it's not a product. You're the product being sold. You know, if you're getting something for free in the data world, you are actually the product, and somebody's paying for that information that's going to make them money in some way, and it's either harmful or at least not beneficial to you in the long run. And that's the thing that I think the youths are going to pick up on not too long from now, and they're going to be not happy when they realize how deeply that is part of the program.
Okay, well, you're an optimist. I think that they're kind of, it's a case of the turtle in the pot, where the temperature is just slowly going up to the point where no one will notice until it boils. Functionally, different retail companies that know your likes and dislikes and can adjust their advertisement for things that you might want to see could be interpreted as a good thing. Unfortunately, privacy is dead. I've mentioned that from one of the first times I ever talked on this technical net, that if you write anything down on the internet, assume that you've written it down on an index card and pushed it into the bulletin board in your local library times a trillion. None of that is private. None of that dies. There are copies made of copies of made of copies. And it's all over the place. So, if you like to have your privacy, I don't know what to tell you. Go down to, I think it's West Virginia, where there's a RF limitation because of equipment that they use there. And you might be a little bit private, but you'll never be private. So, the illusion of privacy is something that most people are going to have to deal with has gone. Again, there are a couple of good things. There are a whole bunch of bad things. And as Jim mentioned, your information is worth money. Facebook is not doing what it's doing just for advertisement. They are also selling everything they learn about you. And there are brokers out there who exchange all of that stuff for money. So, again, it's a thing. It's not going to change. I don't think so. And I don't think youngsters are going to wake up and say, this thing that we've been living with our entire life is very bad and we must change it immediately. They might want a piece of the action, but I think, unfortunately, privacy is one of the things that will disappear as the technology improves. A lot of things are going to disappear. In the old days, if you saw something, if you heard something, then you saw it and you heard it. Nowadays, with artificial intelligence, they could make up videos of anything. They could simulate voices of anything. You can't believe anything you see or hear anymore, which is, I think, a terrible thing in many ways. Although, I mean, the technology impresses me endlessly, but the problems with it scare the heck out of me.
You know, Roy, I think people have to do their own research and find out what it is that they really want. You know, one phone compared to another phone. One phone, it has SMS and talk. It has FM broadcast. It has listen to MP3s on it, and that's it. So you talk and talk, and you listen, and that's how it works. And you get it for 12 times less than the average phone that you can buy at Verizon, some technology outlet. And, you know, who needs more than one way to SMS text? You know, do you need 10 different ways in one phone, you know? And what are you paying for? So you have to look carefully at it and decide, you know, for what your needs are and how much you expect to spend.
Okay, some people will, most people won't. And as much as I kind of made a joke earlier that Google is our friend, Google is becoming less our friend than every day. I'm sure a lot of people have noticed that Google search has acted stranger and stranger in the last few years. A lot of times, if you ask about a product, they will usually present you a lot of links to their rivals, with a little notation off to the side saying sponsored. So, you know, I mean, if you you type in, I would like a Dell computer, where should I go? Surprisingly, what's this? A bunch of links to Apple computers. That's odd. And so, you know, because they're practically a monopoly at this point, they are taking a lot of profits by selling retailers, manufacturers, and such elevated hits to the search engine. So now you have to go off and find either another search engine or do it the old-fashioned way, which a lot of people tend not to like to do things the old-fashioned way anymore. So, yeah, you can do that. You can look yourself. You can buy intelligently. You could not listen to the hype. But most people tend to listen to hype, and they want to be like the other guy. And, you know, I mean, I have a pain in my soul when I see the price of an iPhone these days. I mean, I think of you know, my father, may rest in peace, would probably be silly if I ever told him that what I spent for an iPhone 13. You know, I once told him I bought a calculator for $100, and he thought I was an idiot. So I can imagine what he would think of the iPhones. But again, that's what's happening these days. I mean, thankfully, these virtual goggles that Apple is selling for $3,500, a lot of the people return them in the return window. So, you know, that's not going to be a big thing, I don't think. They'll either have to sell much cheaper devices or give up the line. So, you know, but society will do what it wants to do, and a lot of times it wants to waste money.
Oh, Roy, you know, I have to say that the most popular items, you know, I find, they don't have what I want in it, you know. I wouldn't say they're good. I wouldn't say they're bad, you know. But, you know, after doing my investigation about them, I realized that, you know, what I wanted was some other thing, you know, off into the far right field.
Agreed. Okay, well, we're all in agreement. But again, you know, people will be snowed by promises. People try to sell you a lot of things. Most of them are just gadgets, and they have a very short lifespan. Anyway, David, I thank you a great deal for participating, for bringing up this topic tonight. We only have a little bit more than 20 minutes and two people waiting in the wings, so I thank you very much for your help tonight.
Very good, Roy. Thank you very much for talking on the ham radio with me and 73 for now, KG2RY.
Okay, very good. This is AC2GS. I believe it's Tony out there earlier said that he had a question for tonight. Do you want to give us your question, Tony?
Yes. Thank you, Roy. The first question is, can you hear me better than before?
Yes. It's still kind of quiet, but I can understand every word you say.
Yeah, I think I talk. Okay. Yeah, the second question, first of all, my brother-in-law got out of license and during the Peters for a while. And I'm moving from Queens to Smithtown here in Whitestone. Do one, is it normal, you know, is it common that we just do some kind of point-to-point? How would I know what the success is?
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, unfortunately, this is where my lack of good map skills is showing off. I don't know the distances between the areas. If you're looking for within, say, 10 miles, 15 miles, UHF, VHF repeaters are pretty good. If you're a little closer, you might be able to talk directly back and forth on UHF or VHF. It depends. There's as you go to the lower frequencies, you get to talk farther away, but you have a very limited ground wave propagation. So my 10-meter net here in Brooklyn, I've never been able to contact anyone on the other side of the Nassau-Queens border. By that point, the ground wave propagation kind of dies, and it's too close for the ionosphere to propagate sky waves into that area. So does anyone out there with a better grasp of the map have better suggestions for Tony as far as frequencies that he might want to use to communicate back and forth?
WS2, and I missed the town. The one I think you said was Smithtown.
Smithtown and the other one between the Whitestone, up by the bridge.
Okay. At Queens and Whitestone. If you're talking about HF, if you both could get on 80 meters would be no problem. In fact, I just talked to a guy in Bayside the other day. I'm in Rock Island, not too far, of course, from Smithtown. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, but also assume that UHF, VHF would probably be easy for that type of communication.
They're going to need beams. They're going to need a lot of power, you know, minimum, let's say, 55 watts. Good height on the antennas to go from Whitestone to out here.
Sorry,
I mean, it's doable, but it could get a little costly. You know, of course, the repeaters would be no problem. Back to you.
VHT. Say again?
VHT when you're done.
Sure, Jim. What do you have to say?
That's a similar use case that I've been trying to develop, and my finding so far is that VHF repeaters like this one being the best of the lot in the area does that function great. And if you want to do it without infrastructure, you're really looking at a general license, 80 meters, 40 meters, like the other gentleman mentioned, and NIVIS propagation and VIS propagation. It's doable. It works, but it's another step up. In the meantime, the repeaters are the way to go. That's my size up, and I've been studying that same use case for quite some time.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main purposes these days about repeaters. You don't need the Yagi, the directional, the linear amplifier pumping up your power, you know, unless you're looking for distant single sideband communication on UHF, VHF. You find yourself a good, decent repeater that's operational between you and the other person. And usually, I know of no repeater that's so bogged with users that you have to kind of stand in line and wait to chat for very long. So, Tony, I don't know. What would be the distance between you and your brother, just to give me an idea? But I think the short-term solution certainly would be UHF or VHF repeaters for both of you. You know, you get yourself either a mobile radio or an HD, and most likely there's some repeaters that you would both be able to hit and can have conversations through.
Yes, the distance between the two sites is about 25 miles. That would be, I'm sorry. The gentleman who's in Ronkonkoma, you're talking through Glen Oak, is that correct?
Not tonight. I'm going through Selman, but I can turn my beam around and go into the repeater, into Glen Oak. I've done that before many, many times. But, yeah, that's doable. But that antenna in Glen Oak is on top of, you know, North Shore Towers. You know, we're talking a couple hundreds of feet up in the air. Probably 300, over 300 feet in the air. So there's no problem in doing that. I have a beam with 10 elements. I have a rotator on it. I talk to people far away. We had simplex that many years. We talked to people in Connecticut quite a bit, and that was doable, you know. But they also had, you know, maybe a beam with high power, so we were going back and forth that way. That's okay. I mean, you can do that. But both of you are going to need power. Pretty good height on the antenna, you know, maybe no less than 25, 30 feet would do it. That's my guess to Whitestone. Anyway, back to you, Tony. WS2N. This is Paul, by the way.
Oh, okay. Paul, that's actually my brother-in-law's name. Would brute force might be able to come off. I'm just looking into it. It's not like I went out and bought a tower. I kind of like staying on 2 meters. But then you also have the option of, you know, one that's working it out. But actually, another comment about an earlier comment is that you mentioned a great hobby this year, no doubt. And I love the culture, and it seems to be the last form of free left on this planet.
Yeah, you won't find anyone to disagree with you, Tony. It's a great hobby. I mentioned that it has a lot of depth and breadth. You know, there are a lot of different aspects of the hobby. If you grow tired of one, there's 30 others plus. And you could go on the surface with one, or you could dive really deep and do a lot of interesting stuff. So I wish you luck with it, and you know, if you have any questions, please feel free to take them here. And if I can't handle them, no doubt there's someone else listening in who's participating in our lovely little net. But repeaters are good things, and they're not used very much, unfortunately. They had their peak 25, 30 years ago. When they were tied to telephone lines before cell phones became ubiquitous. And when cell phones came in, a lot of the repeaters fell silent. So there's a lot of them around, accessible, usable. You're not really annoying people by using a local repeater for the most part. But if you want to go with two of you by yourselves, there are towers, there are Yagis, there are amplifiers, there are all kinds of fun little ways to kind of boost your signal from yourself to your brother-in-law.
All right, well, thank you. I'll turn it back over to you guys. Actually, I have to get ready to go to work. So thank you again. This was enjoyable. It really was. The key. 73 to
Jim, you wanted to say something? 73, Tony, and like I said, if you need any other questions answered or any other ideas from the crowd, you know where to seek them out. But, Jim, what do you want to say?
Just a note, there's another alternative for the path he's looking to communicate via is the GMRS service repeater in Bridgeport. That would probably make that trip quite easily. it's a different tack off of ham radio, but it's a thing worth looking into. But I get his use case. It's quite valid. I think it's right in the line with the stuff I've been thinking about. Anyway, just to figure I throw it out there. Thank you. Back to that.
AC2GS. Well, thank you, Jim, for that. Thank you, everyone. Rich, W2BZ, you said you had a couple of little questions or comments to make tonight.
One little offbeat question. Don't want to run into Paul's time, but I don't think we will. You know a Rubik's Cube? I saw it in a film the other day where some people, you know, couldn't solve it, and there's one guy who was great in math who was able to solve it. And I wondered what a Rubik's has to do with math. That's basically the question.
Okay. I am not familiar that there is any kind of mathematical equation that's going on in people's mind. It's more of pattern recognition and a bunch of rules. There are relatively young guys out there who you can randomize a Rubik's Cube and they can bring it back to original pattern in less than about 2 minutes. They picked up speed. So I'm not quite sure if it's really fundamentally mathematical. I mean, everything ultimately can be reduced to mathematics, I guess. But it's more of a pattern that they've discovered, and they just sort of know that based upon the face, you know, how to manipulate the parts to get all the colors on the same side. So I'm not quite sure if even they are doing it on the level of solving an equation. They're just kind of going through a very, very well-honed method that they've deduced from doing this way too many times.
So you think the people who are really good at it have just spent thousands of hours trying to do it and something becomes clear to them, you know, in terms of if you got three colors here and two colors on the other surface, if you twist them, you know what I mean? Does some pattern recognition become clear where they just, if they see a pattern, they know which way to turn it?
Yeah, I think that's what's going on. Yeah, Jim, one sec. That's my idea on that. And it's a combination of different ways. There are loads of YouTubes where people are trying to teach each other how to do it quickly. So some of them just kind of figured it out for themselves. Others got hints and, you know, some guidelines, and then they developed the skill. So, but ultimately, I think it's more of a pattern recognition and a methodology of dealing with different patterns to bring them back to the original state. But, Jim, you wanted to say something?
Just to reinforce the pattern thought that you both have put out there, I have a son that can do them things. He picks them up, puts them down, they're done. I can't. Where he got that from, I don't know. But there is, to my mind, and I've watched him, there's some sort of complex pattern recognition above what we normally talk about. It's an amazing analytical capability that, to me, defies words, but I think that's what we're looking at. Back to you, Roy.
W-S-2-N.
Yes, Paul.
There was a book that came out, I guess it was in the 80s, and it gave you step-by-step instructions on actually how to do it. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, but I get the feeling, though, if everyone read that book, not everyone would be able to finesse it that way. I think there's a bit of a talent, not a very lucrative talent, but a talent nevertheless. I mean, I don't kind of believe in someone had this idea that if you put in X number of hours, you become an expert in anything that you put in that many hours. I know a lot of untalented people who have tried to develop talents and failed miserably. You know, I think it's, for a big extent, it's something you're just innately built with, that is in your chromosomes, is in your nature, nurture,